Okay. They have you qualified briefly. The requirements for chairing the meeting at Central Group Saturday night speakers meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and have attended a group conscience meeting, and I've met those requirements. My name is Suzanne, I'm an alcoholic. And it's an honor to be up here chairing this meeting tonight. I was thinking about the last time I did the Saturday night meeting, and it was when we had the old little house. It's been a long time. I don't even want to know how many years it's been that I did a Saturday night meeting. And it was pretty exciting back then for me because, you know, I picked people that really touched my heart and just brought a lot to my sobriety, and I felt like the meeting was just for me. So I'm kind of getting that feeling already. I know this is your meeting, but it's pretty special for me. You know, I'm grateful for my sobriety. I just celebrated 25 years.
Yeah. And,
you know, it's what God can do for a drunk like me who got here at 23 and just didn't think there was hope. I mean, they made a bet on me my first year of sobriety. I made $10. I thought that was going to happen every year. Two guys came up and said, "We had a bet on you that you were not going to make it, and you made it, so here's $10. And I got to fill my gas up and, you know, have a couple packs of smoke, so that tells you how long ago that was. So, you know, sobriety has been a lot more than just not drinking, but I've got to tell you, the first year was really one of those deals of just not drinking. It was just, everything reminded me of drinking. So it's grateful, you know, for me to be here tonight and, you know, to know that my sobriety just for today is intact because I've done what I know works and I have people around me that love me and keep reminding me to do the deal. I'm going to introduce our speaker, and it's Jennifer. And, you know, it's kind of funny how this worked. I was, you know, looking at my list, and I told her about a month ago that, you know, I was going to be chairing the meetings for September, and she's like, "Oh, that's nice." I'm like, "Well, did you ever speak there?" And dead silence. I said, "Good, you're going to be speaking." And last week I sent her a text message going, "Next Saturday, be there." And I got the perpetual shut up back. So I guess she was pretty excited about it. The one thing I will tell you is I met Jennifer when I had lost my job back in 2009. I had 6 months of severance, so I was taking my time finding a job, and I was not going to pick up any new sponsees. I was, you know, it was all about me. I had lost my job with millions of other people, but Jennifer came up to me one day and said, "You're going to sponsor me. I know you're not raising your hand, but you will sponsor me." And I said, I guess I'm sponsoring you. And it has been a great gift in my life. Sponsorship has always been a great gift, and Jennifer has just taught me so much about myself. I feel like I'm the one that should be thanking her every day for showing up in my life at exactly the right moment, and that's what AA always shows me. So without any further ado, Jennifer.
My name's Jennifer and I'm an alcoholic. I'll just tell you now, this is like so scary for me. This standing up here, I'm going to just take these off because they're not going to work at all. That's better. Facing my fear right now, speaking in front of people. You know, she stole my opening thing right there, saying last week she sent me a text saying, "You're speaking." So there was no asking me. It was just, you know, "See you Saturday." A little nerve-wracking all week because I felt like, oh my God, I need to read the big book, make it right with my husband, like do all these things in 1 week. And do people go to therapy because they're speaking at Central? I did. So now you know that. My sobriety date is January 1, 2009.
Wow.
And I was 35. Obviously it wasn't that long ago for me, so I remember it very well. But what I'm going to tell you tonight is, you know, what it was like for me, what happened, and what it's like for me today. Born a pretty much normal family, I thought. I'm a middle child, so I got that, "Oh, you're the middle child," whatever that means. You know, we're all girls, three girls. I just, you know, I had a very good life. My parents provided for me. I had a lot of nice things growing up. Nothing really traumatic happened to me, so I'm not sure why I turned out this way. But, you know, it just, at some point in my life, I became very afraid of things. I was very fearful of just being away from my family, of death and stuff. It was really weird how I would just not want to leave my parents. Going to school, my mom would have to take me and stay with me. I wouldn't even want her to leave. I mean, up until like a weird age too. I mean, I just did not want to leave my mom. And then sixth grade happens and they take me to a new school. And it's a public school now, and I had my parents walk me into school and stand at the door until the bell rang. I mean, that's such a nerd, right? And then I just managed to get into a group of people where I wanted to be liked so bad. I just wanted someone to accept me and these kids. And so I just started hanging out with these kids who introduced me to drinking. So I was about 12, my first drunk, like absolutely passed out drunk at 12. I had tasted alcohol before that, but my first time ever passing out, I was at a birthday party, and someone brought some booze, and it was gin. And I remember that warm feeling. That feeling just like completely just went down, you know, through my whole body. And it was nice. I just felt calm, like I wasn't afraid. And I just kind of felt like I was accepted with these kids. And that's what I started to do at a young age. I used to, you know, steal alcohol, babysitting jobs, and we would just go in and, you know, get little buzz going, you know, and that was just something that we would do instead of going out and playing. That's what we would do. We'd find alcohol. I'm trying to get centered if you're wondering what I'm doing. So that definitely helped me stay away from the house a lot more, obviously. I no longer wanted to really be close to my parents because now I've got this thing that I'm doing, drinking with my friends. And, you know, obviously my parents can't know about that. So then the times changed for me. I was a competitive swimmer at age 7. And so, you know, that's really who I became. I was a swimmer, and that's just who I thought I was. My parents loved it when I was swimming and winning, and I qualified for a lot of races at a young age. So it was a lot of pressure, I thought, to always try to please my parents, you know. And so when I was swimming, I felt like I was accepted by them. And then if I wasn't, I just didn't feel accepted again. So with this clan, we all went to middle school together, and then, you know, we ended up, some of us went to high school and separated, but we just kind of all stuck together. And that was something that, you know, I felt I was accepted with them. You know, I don't know the drink. That's, I'm going to just fast forward to high school. The same thing, you know, again, I was a real good competitive swimmer and a horrible student by choice. I just skipped school. I just got by. I mean, it was like I was one of these people that, like, I would be able to swim and I wouldn't try that hard, but I, you know, I did good still. And it was like I felt like my life always just got by. I was, like, really good at getting by under the radar, you know, and in high school, even I had teachers would give me grades so I could swim at these state meets because I literally failed. Like, I did not have a diploma walking my senior year, and nobody knew this. I mean, it was like, how did I even, they allowed me to walk the stage. I mean, again, I just got by, you know, and then I take night classes to get my diploma. So, you know, off my swimming friends went, who I swam with, they all got into universities, of course, and, you know, where I should have been, but we didn't even try because it was, you know, my grades were just in the toilet. And I wasn't going to swim at a two-year school, so my career at swimming, you know, ended. And a lot of times I'd go to practice drunk, you know, and the kids would go, someone drinking? You know, and we're at swimming practice, but the, you know, you know, the breathing, you could smell it. And I would just, you know, deny it. And because I'd skip school, and then I, you know, I had to go to practice because, you know, I didn't want my parents to get on to me. But, you know, that was just something I did. And so when I quit swimming, then I really didn't know who I was because that's what I had going for me. So then I had to become a student. And so I really tried to do well at school. I went to a two-year school, but I didn't swim. I went to Gainesville. And I just was normal. We drank and, you know, had the Jim Beam and bagels for game day, and that was normal. You know, it was just, I mean, I just thought that was just what we did. My relationships were unhealthy. I was fighting. I'd fight a lot when I'd get drunk. You know, I'd drink, I think, more than most of my friends did. I would drink always before we went out, so I was already pretty, you know, drunk before I even hit the clubs. But, you know, then I did this lifestyle for a while, going to the fraternity parties, you know, and, you know, it was just normal, I thought. It wasn't until I started going and hitting some nightclubs where, again, my story changed again. My drinking no longer, you know, was just drinking. My story goes that, you know, I started to do some drugs, too. I was introduced to some really fun things in Gainesville, and so as soon as I even entered University of Florida, I felt like I went in the front door and right out the back. I mean, it was like the partying just became my priority, and I managed to hide it somehow. I mean, I did some pretty awful things, you know. I called the admissions and changed my address to Gainesville and then withdrew, so they sent the check, you know, to me at school, and then I just partied up there. And I mean, I totally stole from my parents sending me to school, and I mean, I'm not proud of it, but that's just where I was. So I didn't go to classes. My priority was, you know, drinking, and then, of course, the other things that I would do while I was there. It was just, but drinking always started it for me. So then I started hanging out with a new crowd of people. You know, it was no longer these fraternity parties. Now I was doing these nightclub, like, rave parties. And that changed my life tremendously. I'm already running them off, see? Let me center. Okay. Come on, God. So now we're in Gainesville, and I'm this full-on raver now. I mean, people that see me today, they don't see me. They're like, there's no way. Trust me. I was a raver, okay? And I would go to these nightclubs, and I would automatically, like, try to find out who's the owner, I needed to be in with the in crowd, because I needed to have the free drinks, the free everything else. And so I did, and that was how we, you know, from Thursday to Sunday, it was just like the party was on. And very unhealthy, you know, lost a lot of weight, which was good. That's another story altogether. But I used to do these things because I, you know, had one of my stories, food issues. So, you know, a lot I can see now, looking back, that I used to do things for other reasons. And I only realized that in the last few years. But a new crowd of people now I'm hanging out with. I was like, what do you call those lizards that change colors? Chameleon. I was, thank you. You're awake. A chameleon. I just kind of just fit in wherever I was, you know? Like, if I'm going to hang out with these kids that go to the football games, I can do that really good. And then I can go with these scary kids that, like, have purple hair and piercings and were wearing, like, Sesame Street clothes. I could do that well, too. I mean, that's what we did. And, I mean, I was like, when there'd be a family weekend coming in and we'd still be up all night, we would be out front. And, like, I'm sure people were like, do not hang out. You know, like, I was probably the kid, the parents were like, do not talk to these types of people. I mean, that's just, it was so fun, I have to tell you, though. I had so much fun. I mean, the time I spent there was just awesome. And, like, one of the nights, early mornings that I was coming home, you know, it was over. My parents had caught on to what I was doing, and they were packing my stuff up, you know, at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, oh my gosh, my life's over. So I begged them to let me stay one more night. I was like, just let me stay another night and say goodbye to everyone. And so off to the nightclub I went, and met this fella there that's from England. He came over to DJ, and, you know, not at first at that time did I think that I'd be spending the rest of my life with him, but, you know, things happen on the dance floor, and, you know, I've been with him for 16 years now, so, you know, I definitely was... so I picked him, right, and here we are. I mean, our lives, I met my match. I met someone that was crazier than me. And my parents had already packed my stuff up, so I was like, what do I have to lose, you know? I mean, it was just perfect timing. And a little time went by, a little bit of a time. He ended up coming back to Florida, and I met up with him again. And that was it. You know, I got a ticket to go to England with him for a month, and I ended up staying for a little under a year. And, oh my gosh, I mean, so much fun traveling Europe, you know, him being a DJ. So we went to all these clubs and just killing it. I mean, the drinking was just unbelievable. I mean, it was normal. That was just what we did weekly, you know, there wasn't any slowing down. And that lasted for a little while. You can't take a girl from Florida and put her in England for too long. You know, there's not a lot of sun that shines there. So I ended up having to come home, and thankfully he came home with me, and you know, we got married, and we had our son like within the first year. It was like boom, you know, I was ready to go. I was gonna have a baby, you know, and I just was, this is what I want to do. And no college degree or anything, just we're going to make it. I don't need to go to college, you know? And here we are now. I mean, barely know each other. We're married, and we have a little baby, you know? I'm just like, I look back and I'm like, how did I do it? I mean, talk about God being in my life. I do not know how I raised a baby in the condition we were in. My parents, I mean, they helped a lot. And in fact, my son, my baby Sam's 14. He really thinks of my parents, you know, like my mom is his second mom. He spent a lot of time there because we weren't available. I mean, I wasn't available. It's my story. I'm sorry. But I would just leave him there for the weekend and take off, you know, and caused a lot of problems. You know, even very, very soon after I had my son, I was ready to go to the clubs, you know, and I left him. I was breastfeeding, and I left my son with my mom. And I remember being like, okay, I'm drinking, so I'm doing this. I having to remember if women are in the, you know what I'm talking about? You have breastfeed, and, you know, you have to get rid of that stuff. And it was just like I was drinking and having to you know, be sure I wasn't feeding him this milk that, you know, whatever was in it. So, I mean, it was a mess, and I left him at, like, 2 weeks old. And, you know, I try not to let that hurt me anymore. I've moved on. I don't forget it, but I'm not going to beat myself up about it anymore, that I left my boy, you know, at 2 weeks old, and I wish I didn't. I wish I could just, you know, take that back. But off to the clubs we went, and, you know, what, I don't know what you look like after 2 weeks. I'm sure I shouldn't have been at a nightclub. But the good news is the lights are really off at these, you know, raves, so you don't see any. I probably look good. But I had to go out and pump. So I'm in this car, passed out, and I wake up, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, it was a mess. I actually was in the night, you know, the club, and then to the car to pump, and then back in the club. I mean, that's a true story. You know, driving back from Gainesville the wrong way, seeing, like, signs for Tallahassee, like, whew, you know, how did we drive? Like, that is God. I don't know how I managed back then. I think about it, and I'm like, how in the hell did we get through? You know? And that's God taking over. I mean, amount of blackouts I drank. I mean, I drove in. That was normal. Driving drunk was normal to me. Picking my son up in the carpool lane, I didn't feel comfortable unless I had one of those red plastic cups with something filled to the rim, because I just couldn't stand it. And then having to pick him up and, you know, stand far from people so they didn't smell my breath. You know, it's... So, we got through it. And it lasted for, you know, my son's 14, so for about 10 years of his life, it was full-on party, chaotic lifestyle. And then it stopped working for us. It just, I realized that the drinking, I'm still feeling now. Like, I can't drink enough or take enough of things that will stop me from feeling. And that's when it really got bad for me. Because for me, you know, I didn't have the outside things happen, the DUIs, or anything like that, but my mind, what I do to myself, I mean, it's just, it's the worst up here. And so that was loud. It got louder and louder when the drinking wasn't working anymore. And the person that I drank the best with, that wasn't working either. You know, it was like, it wasn't making us okay. And we had a bit of a blowout, I remember. And I just knew, I was one of these people that I knew I was bad. Like, you didn't have to tell me. I knew that it wasn't right what I was doing. I don't remember stopping and starting and stopping because you couldn't have, you know, I knew when it was over I'd be done. I had to go to the bitter end. And one of the times that I tried to go to AA, I was 30. And I had a big blowout at home and made a big mess of things. I ended up calling 911. Cops came and, someone else went to jail. It should have been me. And then I took a bunch of pills. I never talk about, like, I tried to kill myself because I don't remember. I wanted to piss my mom off. And so I took pills. And I wrote a letter, like, you know, I'm going to, you know, screw her, you know, and see ya. But I didn't have enough, and I knew that. But it was like I was just so out of it. Well, they Baker Acted me. So I got to spend some time in, what is it, South Seminole. Great. And it just happened to be my son's first day of school. So both his parents missed his first day of school in kindergarten. And my parents had to take him to school, and my sister got to be there. So, I mean, even though my son doesn't remember that, I mean, I do. You know, it's a pretty big day to take your kids to school for the first time, and we miss that. And, you know, so I knew I had a problem. I mean, I knew it. So I decided I would do some treatment, and I'd go into AA. I started my first meeting, and I did this all on my own. Like, people would tell me, but, I mean, I knew I needed some help, but I didn't know anything about AA. And so I went to some outpatient thing at South Seminole. I did that for a little bit. And I started to, you know, drink when I knew I had certain days. You know, so I started to work it. It was like I didn't even have to be there. I wasn't court ordered. And I was still trying to finagle doing things where they would, you know, not find out, you know, drinking during doing it. So it didn't last very long. I went to Winter Park Group, was my first meeting I went to, and in fact when I go back there now, the same people are there, so that's pretty cool. It just didn't work out. It was like I didn't work it. I didn't pick up a book. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't do any of that. 5 years goes by and I'm back at it. You know, we're back in this tornado, and I have another baby. You know, now I have, you know, a baby at 8 years apart, and I have this newborn. The party never slowed us down. It's crazy. Like, we would just have these crazy parties at our house, just the two of us. But, you know, here I'm getting older, and my friends are now slowing down, and they're not interested in doing some of the things that we're doing. And so we started having to do things on our own, and that, like, worked for us. It you know, I thought I had the best marriage, because I was out of it all the time. It was just, you know, I'm trying to speak from my heart, and I know making jokes sometimes takes me away from that. So, point is, I had five more years out there, and it was brutal. I mean, it got to the point where I would like drinking by myself. I preferred it. That I would always pass out. I was always passing out, blacking out. Don't tell me what I did in the morning. That guilt and that shame. Thank you, God, I don't have that today, because that is the worst, coming off of thing, you know, just coming off of a weekend bender of drinking and not being available for your kids. You know they're out there and I'm in here. That was horrible. And so I just started telling people I'm going to be getting some help. You know, I know that I'm going to get some help, but, you know, not today. I'm going to go get some help. And people, no, you're fine. But it got to the point then, my dad's an alcoholic, and he's been sober for almost 8 years, and he never pushed it on me, so that's the first place I went. You know, my marriage was not doing well, so I thought, if we're going to end this, I need to be sober. So I really was like, you know, I'm going to get in here and get sober so I can do this right-minded. And my dad just said, whatever you want, I'll help you. You know, what do you need? And pulled up the screen, and I saw Central here, you know, downtowns. So I thought I might as well, you know, go down here again. And walked in. It was New Year's Eve, and sat over here, I remember, so scared and looking around at these women. It was a Wednesday night women's meeting, and I was just like, my life is so over. You know? Robin was sharing. She was just like, you know what she said. I don't know to repeat it, but like the things she was telling me to do, I was just like, whoa, she's crazy, and creasing my book, you know, and telling me to read this. And whatever reason, I didn't go home and stop at the 7-Eleven and drink that night. You know, I left here and I went home, and I was serious. I mean, that night I asked somebody to be my sponsor. I was ready to go. I was like looking at that, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go in all out. You know, when I do something, man, I do it all out. So I asked this lady to be my sponsor. You know, we're working the steps. We don't need to do 2 and 3 because I believe in God, so we can go to 4. Like so many people say, I mean, I was just ready to just jump on this. Whoa, hang on, you know, and she wanted to do some, like, me read from a book from her. And I have to tell you, that is, like, the scariest thing to read in front of people. I don't go to a lot of big book meetings because I just get this fear, like, God forbid a word pop out that I don't know how to pronounce, you know, and that's something that I'm probably going to be going to a lot more book meetings, I'm sure. But I came in here and we started slowly. She had me reading from the book. I called her. I did what she said. I was serious. I was so desperate to not be that person who walked in that door. I would do anything. So willingness was like, I was ready to go. And so I followed direction. I called 3 people. I called my dad, another friend I saw in here from high school, like all these people that I knew that would, and, you know, and she's like, no, you need to call 3 fresh people that you don't know. And that was, oh God, please don't answer. I know, you know how we do that? Answer, don't answer, don't answer, don't answer. And then you'll get the one that answers, and you know, but it was always awesome. Every time I hung up the phone, I was like, wow, you know, now I know a little bit more about her. I feel better, you know, so for some reason, those phone calls, you know, they work. So I started that little going along, and I was just having a hard time, feeling really rotten. I remember just saying, this sucks. Oh my God, this sucks. How did I manage to get through the first like 4-6 months of my sobriety? But I just kept holding on. People told me to hold on. Don't move. Don't get a divorce. Wait. You know, keep coming to meetings. And so I did. I just kept showing up here. But I wasn't able to let things out, you see, because for me, feelings are just very uncomfortable. And when I'm sober, to feel is to be, I want to run from it. And so anytime I'd want to share something, I would, you know, either make a joke or do something else to direct it from not coming out from my gut where I needed to get it out from. And that only lasted for so long until I got real. And as soon as I did, it was like just so much happened. I mean, I started to feel different, you know. I started to really look forward to coming to meetings, and these new people that I'm hanging out with, I'm liking them. Like, I can't wait to see them. No one's calling me from downtown asking where I am, you know. No one's missed me. And these are like, so I didn't feel like I missed anything. That was awesome. I didn't feel like I missed any friends because, you know, it's like a girl's night out. It's sort of what I thought it was, a proper girl's night out. And I can hear you, you know, it's like not at nightclubs, like where you don't really talk to anybody there. So, you know, as things go, my friendship and my sponsor, we've decided being friends was so much cooler. So we decided I was going to, you know, find a new sponsor, which I did. I trailed her down. And, you know, I'm telling you, for me, when I'm in harmony with my God, people show up in my life. And she's one of them. And, you know, it took us a little, you know, like it is anything, a relationship. And we started working together and getting to know each other. And, you know, it's like everything I ever asked for in a friendship, you know, it's the real deal, that I get to be myself. She doesn't judge. And when I watch her, I want to do what she does. You know, what she says and does are the same, and it's very much God-centered, and it's really helped me a lot. So through being sober my first year, you know, well, woohoo, got my 1 year sober on New Year's. That was weird, and but you know, it wasn't until after that that things started to happen. Now I'm going through bankruptcy. Whoops. Now I'm giving back a car, you know, and it's hard, and I'm sober, and I'm having to like walk through this without having a drink or take anything for the anxiety. What happens to me now is I get panicked, you know, because I don't have anything to like, when I don't think of God, that is, when I forget, oh, God's there, I panic, and that lack, that horrible feeling comes over me. But got through the bankruptcy, and I ended up renting a house, a beautiful place somewhere else. You know, I still have my job. You know, things are okay. Nothing happened. You know, we walked through it. We had some marital problems, some major family things that worst fights I've ever had in my family. And I'm sober, and I'm thinking, how is this happening? You know, like the worst falling out ever. I caused a lot of pain. And in my family, and you know, had to really look at myself. That was painful to really look at, see what type of person I am. And I didn't realize it until some of these things happened that it stopped me and said, "Holy cow, you know, what am I doing?" And so I didn't drink over it though. Went through the steps with my sponsor. You know, called her instead of drinking. I literally wanted to drink at my family member, you know, "I'll show you, I'm gonna drink, I'll give my sobriety up." But I called my sponsor, you know, she had me pray, and I got through it another day sober. So, you know, the things I've walked through sober is amazing. But you know, I know that working with others is key. It helped me get through my first year for sure. Calling another person, get out of your head, go to meetings. You know, all those things obviously work. There's a reason why they tell us that. But for me, my feelings kept coming up, and it's like I can't keep stuffing them. So I had, you know, I have to go outside and get extra help. That's my story. You know, I have to deal with wherever, you know, wound is there to get healed, and I deal with that with other people. And so that's just where I am with my sobriety. Lately, I've just been showing up and realizing that, you know, I come in here and I can be this nice person. I want to help you. I really genuinely want to help you. But when I go home, it's not the same. And I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be the person that comes in here and says one thing and then goes home and does another. So, whoo. So I'm getting better, you know? My life is better than it was. Shit.
All right.
So, now that I can talk to you from that place, I know that I'm going to get better, because that's where I grow, when I'm real and I don't stuff it. And that's what this is all about for me. It's a work in progress. You know, my son getting therapy that he needs from all the, you know, stuff he went through. My younger daughter is just like, didn't experience this, and she's just completely, you know, this little love bug, and she's the little girl that I want to be, you know, wanted to be. And she channels God. I mean, the thing she says, she's this old soul, and she just talks to me, and I'm like, thank you, God. You know, don't worry about talking to people, Mommy. You still have all day today and tonight. You don't have to worry about tomorrow. That's really what she said. So from walking in here, you know, I get to live a different life today. It's scary, I can tell you, but it's so worth it. I mean, I've never worked so hard. This is not something I'm just getting by on. I mean, I'm not running from it. I'm actually walking through it. And what I learned is that whenever it's really good, you know, just to already be calm, because that's going to leave you. And then it'll come back around, you know, and it'll be not so good. But just keep going, and it'll come around again. It's this big circle that I'm learning through working here, working the steps, that, you know, nothing, like, I can go through anything. I've just experienced a best friend losing her dad, and I mean, the way we all swarmed around her and just made things happen for her so she could be home with him and bury him. I'm just like, I dreamed for friendship like this. I mean, we just show up for each other, and it's a friendship that I will do anything for, you know. When I come in here, it's like miracles. I walk in and I even was arguing on the way here, you know, and then we got out of it. But it's like I walk in this door here, and it's I leave it at the door. And I can pick it up on the way out, but I just leave it at the door, and I come in here and I listen to the miracles that have happened, you know. Things get good, and then I forget, and I stay away, and then I wait till I'm just hurting so bad that I just can't even stand it and say, oh yeah, pick up a phone, come back here, you know, do all those things that we've done. They work. I mean, I can't tell you enough how this, how Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. It's changed my family. You know, we're a work in progress. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that my life is just so great. It's painful. I'm learning to walk through that, though. I'm learning to let someone know what I need. You know, for example, go away, leave me alone means I need a hug. Just so you know. You know, sometimes I'm just amazed that we get to be here and experience this. You know, I don't know what I would have been like if I didn't come in here. I mean, I would be afraid that I wouldn't die and I'd be living with this head of craziness, you know. So to come in here and to be able to experience life like this, I have the coolest God. My God is just, I don't know, I don't have a description, it's just everything. When I hear a bird, when I see a bright flower, when I'm at the ocean, I mean, that is when I'm just like at real peace. And I have choices today, you know, I don't have to be a nasty person if I remember that I can give everything over to God. It's changed my life. If you're new or you're coming back, just hang on. Just get in the middle of this thing. I personally, if you know, give me your number, I'll call you. But I just, I can't tell you enough how grateful I am. I'm trying to wait another 5 minutes, Jim. I'm distracted. Hang on. I read this today, and this was perfect. It was September 1. Willingness to grow, and that's where I am. If more gifts are to be received, our awakening has to go on. Sobriety fills the painful hole in the soul that my alcoholism created. Often I feel so physically well that I believe my work is done. However, joy is not just the absence of pain. It is the gift of continued spiritual awakening. Joy comes from ongoing and active study, as well as application of the principles of recovery in my everyday life, and from sharing that experience with others. My higher power presents many opportunities for deeper spiritual awakening. I need only to bring into my recovery the willingness to grow. And today I am ready to grow. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful. Thank you.